What's going on, everybody? Welcome back into the Two Stripes podcast, the podcast that covers all things college football. My name is Colton Denning, and I am your host. We've been away for about a week. Hope you enjoyed the UCF episode last week. You can catch that episode, this episode, and all the other Two Stripes podcast episodes by going to soundcloud.com/twostripespod or by going on to Apple Podcasts and searching the Two Stripes podcast. If you like the show, please leave a review, subscribe, all of that good stuff. But enough about that. Last week we talked about the American Athletic Conference. This week we are sticking in the AAC and talking about the Cincinnati Bearcats and their new head coach, Luke Fickell. So to do that, I am joined by Clayton Truder, and he is one of the staff writers and contributors over at Down the Drive, SB Nation Cincinnati site. Clayton, what's going on, man?
Oh, not a whole lot. Thanks for having me this afternoon. I'm looking forward to talking about the team and looking forward to a fresh start in 2017.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting your analysis on Cincinnati. And being an Ohio State fan, I'm pretty familiar with Luke Fickell and what his mentality is. But I'm interested to hear how his first 5 or 6 months have gone on that job. But to lay some groundwork, how do Bearcats fans feel about Luke Fickell being hired by Cincinnati?
The vast majority of people writing about this and talking about it, whether on Twitter or Facebook or talking about it locally or in the Cincinnati press, have been very positive about it. People love his enthusiasm, his aggressive efforts to recruit within the state of Ohio, his connections in the state, the obvious rapport he seems to have with players. I would say overwhelmingly people have been positive about it. I'm a little bit of an outlier compared to most people who write about Cincinnati athletics. I remain a little skeptical about the hire. I'm very happy with all of his enthusiasm and the approach he's taking. People particularly love how in the summer practices he's taking this, we're going to have an up-tempo offense approach, this Chip Kelly-esque kind of timed practice methodology. I don't know. I'm waiting to see what happens. I look back to 2011 when he coached Ohio State, had more talent than virtually everybody they were playing against that year, and ended up 6-7. I realize it was a very difficult circumstance coming in and replacing Tressel, but at Cincinnati, you're going to be coaching a team where the cupboard is pretty bare. Tommy Tuberville, it is widely considered, was fairly indifferent to recruiting his last couple of years on campus. There certainly is not the war chest of players at Cincinnati. Cincinnati is probably less talented than most of their opponents in the AAC this year. I compare that to Fickell coaching at Ohio State, where the team was clearly more talented than at least the majority of their opponents in the Big Ten. It remains to be seen if he can coach this group up. My concern and my fear is that by the time he gets his guys ready to play and suited up, he will already be in hot water as a coach. I don't know if the talent is there to really build a successful program going forward. They have a favorable schedule within the conference. I don't know how good of a team this is going to be, though. They're picked fourth in the AAC East. That seems about right to me. The AAC East is a little weaker than the West. If this team can become bowl eligible, I would be very, very pleased with that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the 2011 season, because watching that, obviously as an Ohio State fan, that's the worst season Ohio State has had, maybe in program history, at the very least, modern program history. And Fickell was put into a pretty rough spot there, given everything that shook down with Jim Tressel, it being his first real experience as a head coach, and then the player suspensions. But you're right. Things went completely wrong that season, and it's not like Ohio State was devoid of talent, as we saw the next year Urban Meyer takes over and they go undefeated. And how much talk was there about that 2011 season, and did he talk about that at all and what he learned from that year?
I think to a great extent he fell back on what were the understandable excuses about that. But he's one of those guys who said there's no excuse for it, but here are the excuses, was generally his response to that. I think his enthusiasm has charmed people in Cincinnati, though. So in general, most people writing about the Bearcats, whether they're bloggers or whether they're people writing in the local media, seem to have given him a pass on that and are looking forward to seeing what's coming. I maybe am a little bit less optimistic than they are about that. I just don't know. Looking at the AAC, this is a conference that's clearly gotten better over the last couple of years as the Bearcats have gotten worse. All of these teams are jockeying for position, trying to get into one of the major conferences. I just don't know if the Bearcats are ready to keep up. I in a way think this is somewhat like what happened at Minnesota a couple of years ago. Fickell reminds me a lot of Tim Brewster, this guy they brought in, I think, 2010 or 2011 to replace Glenn Mason. Maybe it was like 2009 to replace Glenn Mason. Glenn Mason was kind of a boring coach. They were kind of 7-5, 6-6 all the time. Brewster's this really enthusiastic guy who has a great rapport with players, is excellent at recruiting. The team falls flat and is a 2-10 team a couple of years later, and he gets fired. There's a lot of these youngish, enthusiastic coaches out there who get hired and seem to create a sense of momentum for their program, but then it doesn't actually work out. I fear that Fickell may be in that mold. The kind of guy that I think Cincinnati needs is someone like Jerry Kill or Tracy Clays, who ended up replacing Brewster in Minnesota, who's kind of a boring, steady presence who's used to building a program up. I think Cincinnati needs that after falling in recent years from the heights they had much earlier in the decade.
Getting into this year's team and the offense, they had a really tough time generating a strong or any sort of type of run game last year. What was the talk in spring and how did they look, and what's the outlook heading into fall ball in the season with that running game?
A lot of people credited the weak running game to Mike Boone missing so much action last year. He's a very versatile, often explosive back, or at least he was in 2014 and 2015. He missed a significant amount of time, and as a result, it hurt the running game significantly. He's back for his senior year. The offensive line, though, is almost certainly not as good as it was last year. If you look at the preseason previews from 2016, people talked about what a good offensive line the Bearcats had. They had several guys who looked to be potentially all AAC-type offensive linemen. They only have two linemen returning right now. Those guys both have 1 year of starting experience. I think it's a rebuilding process up front. If Boone is healthy, he can make some plays. I think particularly in the passing game, he made several big plays in 2014 and 2015 coming out of the backfield. I think if he is capable of mixing things up for them, they will be able to establish the run. But I think this is a team that's going to have to rely heavily on the pass, especially with the kind of secondary they have, which will almost certainly give up significant yardage this year. Cincinnati finished 123rd in scoring last year. I think they'll almost certainly improve on that. How much they will improve at running the football remains to be seen. I'm hopeful that Boone's going to be healthy. We'll see how the offensive line can provide in front of him, though.
You talked about Fickell wanting to come in and use tempo and maybe bring more of that power-style attack, Ohio State attack, that is under Urban Meyer that he was a part of. Do they have the pieces to even do that? Do you think that we'll see sort of a hybrid of what they were built for under Tuberville and wanting to use some of the principles that Fickell would like to use going forward? Or are they just going to, even if they have square pegs and round holes, they're just going to go through with this and kind of get it set for 2018 and 2019 when he can bring in some of his guys to run that system?
I have a sense that they're building for 2018, 2019. One of the things that makes me think about this is quarterback Hayden Moore, who will almost certainly be the starter. His Twitter page, he has certainly transformed his body over the summer. He posted a picture maybe a week ago, a before and after photo, where he looked like that Tom Brady combine photo, where he's just kind of looking out of shape and not very athletic. And then all of a sudden he looks like Michael Phelps now, a picture from him about a week ago. I assume they had him transforming his body to go from being a classic dropback passer to being more of this tempo quarterback. I'm not sure he's really attuned to this. I think Hayden Moore is a very talented quarterback. He had some rough times last year when he was playing, sharing the starting duties with Keel and then with Ross Trail, who may well see some action this year as well. Cincinnati has two very good wide receivers in Devin Gray and Khalil Lewis. Gray's actually on the Biletnikoff watch list. I would rely heavily on those guys in 2017. I fear, though, they're going to be pushing towards this tempo offense type approach. I'm also skeptical of the offensive coordinator they brought in to do this, Mike Denbrook from Notre Dame. They tried to do that under Brian Kelly. I think very mixed results. That's also a team that had a tremendous amount of talent. I don't know if he is the guy I would bring in for that job. So a degree of my skepticism of Fickell also comes from his hiring. The defensive coordinator they hired, Marcus Freeman, certainly improved what was going on at Purdue, even though that hasn't been a strong team. He was a standout at Ohio State as a linebacker as well. He seems like a very steady, stable pick. Denbrook, I'm a little more skeptical of. Getting back to the offense more generally, I think they have a team in place that is more a Tuberville-esque type passing attack, but I think they're going to be moving towards that Ohio State offense more quickly than I would be comfortable with, at least. I'm of the mentality you use the talent you have at the moment.
Hayden Moore and Ross Trail both split time at quarterback. Is there any sort of quarterback battle heading into this season? And, I mean, it appears since you brought up Hayden Moore first that he's going to at least get the first chance to be the guy this year.
He looks to be the guy. It seems like there was a lot of drama going on in the offensive study rooms during last season, and there was a lot of hemming and hawing about who the quarterback was going to be. Moore strikes me as being clearly the most talented among their options. There was also talk of Torrence Gibson, who had transferred from Ohio State. When he went into Ohio State as a four-star recruit, he moved quickly from being a quarterback to a wide receiver. He had transferred to Cincinnati. There was talk of trying to move him to quarterback in 2017, possibly redshirting him for 2018. But just a couple of weeks ago, he transferred to one of those Mississippi junior colleges that are being featured on Last Chance U. Who knows? He may end up back at Cincinnati in the future. He's not going to be the quarterback this year. I think when Gibson was in the mix, there was a possibility of him being the man in 2017. It seems like Hayden Moore is going to be. Getting into better shape is almost certainly a good thing for him. He doesn't strike me as a guy with the athletic capacity to be your Ohio State-style tempo quarterback, though. I think he's very talented. He had some outstanding games in 2015. Hopefully he returns to that kind of play in the near future.
Flipping to the defensive side of the ball in Fickell's strength, how excited are people that, at the very least, even if the talent may not be there, that at least somebody with Fickell's resume and his track record of building great defenses, especially with superb linebacker play, is kind of in place? And what are the expectations for the defense this year?
Fickell has gone out and gotten several significant commitments, guys who probably would not have looked at Cincinnati otherwise, who've committed to them in the past couple of months. In terms of the future, it looks very bright on the defensive side of the ball as a result of that. The linebacking core right now was certainly weakened by the graduation of Eric Wilson, who was really the main stalwart on the defense last year. They have some good linebackers who I think will certainly benefit from Freeman and Fickell being there. Jalen Minor in particular, their middle linebacker, is a very steady fire plug in the middle. They have a couple of questionable guys at outside linebacker who are kind of blown up safeties. Pierre Young is a very talented player. He may be a little big to be a little small to be playing outside linebacker. And there are a number of underclassmen who are vying to contribute in the outside linebacker roles in this 4-3 defense. Moving forward, I think the defense will certainly improve. The linebacking core has some talent at it, but I think the addition of Fickell and Freeman coaching this group will certainly improve them considerably. The defensive line is certainly the strength of the Bearcats defense. You have Cortez Broughton, who is second team All-AAC, a real anchor in the middle. You have a group of several strong defensive ends, including Kamani Fritz, Kevin Muhan, guys who are both steady and explosive players on the outside, both of whom are in their junior year. They both look to improve their sack totals, get more tackles for losses in 2017. There is some talent on that side of the ball. It remains to be seen how well it will produce in 2017. Stopping the run was not a major issue for Cincinnati last year. When they needed to do so, they were pretty effective at that. I expect that to continue this season.
Yeah, looking at Freeman, and you mentioned he's a very young guy that had a distinguished career at linebacker for Ohio State. Has he or Fickell kind of shed any insight into what their philosophy on defense is going to be? Is it going to be like Ohio State with that Michigan State-style quarters coverage and trying to build up a defensive line that can get to the quarterback without blitzing?
There's been a lot of talk around that, certainly. Part of that is a matter of the talent they have on the roster at the time. I think they're being very pragmatic with that approach, too. Muhan in particular, he led the team in tackles for losses last year, should be a disruptive force in the AAC on the defensive line this year. Whether moving forward that will be the approach, my inclination is to think yes, but it's also at this moment it makes a lot of sense for them to be looking at it in those terms, too. With the kind of secondary they have right now, they certainly need to get some pressure with the front four. It's a very inexperienced group, and some of the guys they have coming back gave up a lot of big plays last year and will need to improve, certainly, if this team is going to be bowl eligible.
What do you think a fair expectation for Cincinnati is in 2017?
If they can win 6 regular season games, I'd be very pleased. Part of that, I think they have the capacity to do that in part because their schedule is pretty favorable. They don't have to play Houston. They don't have to play Memphis. Their toughest conference road games are Navy and South Florida, which will both be very difficult to come out of with a win. They play at the Big House, which will almost certainly be a shellacking. Their other 3 non-conference games are very winnable, Austin Peay, Marshall, and Miami, Ohio. I think they can certainly manage 3 conference wins. If they end up 6-6, 7-5, I think that would be considered a successful campaign, and I think it's certainly an aspiration of which this group is capable. If they were in the AAC West, I think making a bowl game would be a much more significant stretch. The AAC West, all 6 teams are either competitive or getting better, with Houston and Memphis being 2 of the 3 powerhouses in the conference, along with South Florida. You have Navy has a solid returning team. Tulsa has lost quite a bit, but had a very impressive club last year. Additionally, you have SMU and Tulane with 2 very explosive emerging offenses being led by Chad Morris at SMU and then Willie Fritz at Tulane. Those teams strike me as being potentially bowl eligible in the very near future. I think Cincinnati's lucky to be on the eastern side of the equation, where East Carolina and UConn are both in serious rebuilding stages as well.
You talked about not being maybe as enthused as other people were about the Fickell hire and wanting a different sort of attitude or mentality in that head coaching job. But what do you think that the program can be under Luke Fickell?
It strikes me as they're either going to come out and get back to where they were under Kelly or Butch Jones or something, or they're going to be even further in remission. Luke Fickell doesn't strike me as the guy who's going to keep the team about the same place. It's either going to be a significant improvement in a relatively short period of time, or they're going to regress even further, is my sense. He's coming in looking to revolutionize the program. Revolutions tend to do either one of 2 things. They either tend to bring about a dramatic positive change or a dramatic negative one, at least in football terms.
Do you think at the very least, even if Fickell doesn't succeed and they give him 3 or 4 seasons, that he'll be able to raise the talent level there, especially with a recruiting strategy that seems to be going much harder after those Ohio kids who wouldn't have gone to Cincinnati prior?
I think almost certainly. I think the biggest question with him is, are they going to give him enough time for this thing to come into being? It depends on the administration, certainly, how they approach the situation. They've talked about giving him a lot of time. If they're 2-10 this year and 3-9 next year, we'll see how that works out. But certainly, the cupboard will not be bare under him. He seems to be a very strong recruiter. Let's say he only lasts 3 or 4 years. Whomever replaces him will have a better war chest coming in than Fickell did when he replaced Tuberville.
In 5 to 7 years, do you think it's likely that we'll see Cincinnati in a Power 5 conference?
No. I think, unfortunately, the mentality a lot of Bearcats fans have taken is they viewed the era of when the team went undefeated and was in the top 10 for a couple of years. They viewed that as the norm for the program. I just don't know that that is a reasonable aspiration for the Bearcats in the long term. I think in some respects, being without a very solid conference home, the AAC is a very amorphous thing, makes it more difficult for them, and I think encourages them to continue looking elsewhere. There's a little part of me that wishes they would just be a powerhouse in the MAC in certain respects. That would certainly be a steadier place for the program to be than always aspiring to be something else. That's not a common view among the people writing about the Bearcats either, but most of the people writing about the Bearcats are horrified that they're not in the Big 12 at this point, and that was just, there was endless rending of the garments over that. Among Bearcats folks on Twitter.
All right, as we wrap this up, before I get you out of here, Clayton and I follow each other on Twitter. We're both big pro wrestling fans. I want to ask Clayton a few questions here and get his opinion on his fandom and where he stands. So, first of all, who's your favorite pro wrestler of all time, Clayton?
Ric Flair. I think he is the best combination of promo, look, and performance there's ever been. any day. If I'm bored, I will just flip on some Ric Flair promos and it will brighten my day.
Yeah, well, I don't think too many people are going to disagree with you on that. The 30 for 30 on ESPN, it was announced yesterday, is going to come out. I know that I definitely can't wait.
I missed it. There's a Ric Flair 30 for 30?
Yeah, I think it's coming out in November, but they've been talking about it for the last, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 months, and it was going to happen, but nobody had a date on it. And I think they already had it in the can, but people have just been waiting on it, and they finally gave a date to it. So I would imagine that that's going to be one of the best 30 for 30s we've ever seen.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm glad they're not just having this kind of Northeast focus where they're just going to like do it on the, you know, WWF WrestleMania emergence kind of thing. I think that's good. I like a lot of the Carolinas, Georgia, Florida Championship Wrestling style stuff from the territory days appeals to me. I like this very kind of heel centric storytelling they had in those regions.
Who's your favorite right now?
I love AJ Styles. I'm enjoying the Styles Owens feud a lot. I'm actually enjoying Jinder Mahal's run. I think he's been a very effective heel in recent months, and it's a turn back to, in many respects, an approach that many of the companies took for a long time and was excellent at getting heat. I'm pleased to see somebody getting some old-fashioned ire from the crowds again. Owens has done a pretty good job of that recently, too. I wish I watched more of the indies. To some extent, the indies have become the major leagues with so many Ring of Honor and New Japan guys becoming the stars in the big leagues. But those guys would be among my favorites. I watch a fair amount of NXT, too, and I enjoy that as well.
Yeah, I think the best thing about what's going on right now is it's more accessible than ever. Like you said, you got Ring of Honor that you can watch. There's all this stuff on Flow Slam that you can subscribe to. There's New Japan World, which is awesome. And if you're more of the WWE fan, they have 6 hours of content with Raw, SmackDown, NXT each week, and then everything else they put out, and if it's a pay-per-view week. So there's more than enough content right now.
Yeah, I'm overwhelmed by the content myself. I mean, I long for the days of having an hour of Raw myself.
I've stopped watching Raw, just, and it was bad for a while, so I stopped watching it, but even now when I've seen, and I'll read the reviews, and people have been saying that it's getting better, but 3 hours is just, that's too much.
The thing is, it's just, I think in the last 10 years, the end of the territory days have really come home to roost for them. They're trying to be all things to everybody, and they can't do it. And also just having the network thing, they're trying to make a little something for every possible niche, and nobody ends up being happy. It's just too much to follow. There's too many different elements of it going on. If they were going to do a brand split, I think the right approach would be to have a complete split, acting like they didn't exist in the same universe, rather than, you know, bringing them together for the pay-per-views and stuff. I think you have to treat it like, rather than going calling one Raw and calling one SmackDown, you have to treat it like it's a completely separate company. They've tried to have their cake and eat it too, I mean, including with when they did the ECW thing a number of years ago now. It's unfortunate there isn't any, in spite of all of these, what are essentially craft breweries of wrestling that have emerged as competition, they aren't really competition in any real sense.
Let's fast forward to March, or I guess early April now, 2018, Superdome in New Orleans.
And you get to book WrestleMania. Who's in your main event?
I'm speechless.
And that's a good thing with that, how much talent there is right now, because you can pick any sort of number of, you know, those indie style dream matches now, with WWE basically being the only big show in town.
I would like to see the continuing of Jinder myself, and just building him up as a reviled heel. I think would be great. Don't pull the plug on that. Don't give up on that as that is storyline. Find some ultimate face to challenge him, maybe AJ against Jinder. I don't know. I think you really need to get back to a classic heel face scenario. The last couple of years, Roman Reigns have been very difficult with him being at the top of the card. I think it's been unfair to him as well as to the fans in many respects. Nobody's really been happy with what's going on. We'll see. I think the closer they get back to the old-time religion, the better they will do.
Yeah, I think that would be pretty legitimate to get that heel face sort of main event WrestleMania, where you don't have, you know, half the crowd cheering for one guy and half the crowd cheering for the other guy. But as I say that, you know, we're probably on the track for John Cena and Roman Reigns, which, you know, is what it is. And it'll certainly be a moment. It's not something for me and probably not, you know, for fans like us that would really enjoy, but it'll be a moment and it'll be cool to see. But I think if I were to ever have the choice, I think I'd put John Cena in it and, you know, bias selfishly, I'd put Shinsuke Nakamura in it. And
that'd be great.
If you want to build that next star and you want it to be organic and you want this to be something new and something different, then I think going that route would be pretty beneficial for everybody. You would give John Cena a legitimate loss, and I think you can avoid having him lose and losing that audience that would normally boo whoever beats him. Because I think even with a guy like Roman Reigns, you're setting yourself up, if you have him beat John Cena, of maybe turning some of that family portion of your audience against him. I think with a guy like Shinsuke and his charisma, I think, you know, and he doesn't have people booing him right now. Everybody's behind him. I think that you have him win. I don't think you hurt him in the process, and you want to pass that torch for a couple years. I think that that's how you do it. But I mean, that's fantasy booking, and that's something to where, you know, we're going to see him on SmackDown on Tuesday, and it probably won't be a clean finish, but I think seeing them in a spot at either SummerSlam or WrestleMania where you can kind of pass that torch and say, hey, here's the guy, even if it's only for a couple years, I think makes the most sense and would be great to see.
I agree. I think in some respects, the most important thing is that the crowd does not become a character in the storytelling. I think that in some respects, they have almost been too responsive, and by responding to the crowd and creating that as its own kind of agent in the storyline, that's been a negative thing. I think it makes it very difficult booking-wise to try to build around that. That's why I think it's important to have a clear heel and a clear face in the scenario, where almost everybody is on one side of the equation.
Yeah, and I think, too, if you want to have a guy like Brock in the main event, which we saw a couple of years ago, it's going to be hard to put somebody against him that is going to get Brock booed. I mean, we saw it with Reigns. We may see it again. But I think if you want to go that route, then AJ was a guy that you talked about earlier that I think people love Brock, people love AJ, but you put him in there against Lesnar and have him throw his body around, I think you can get some major sympathy for AJ Styles in a feud like that. And if you want your classic babyface heel and guy overcoming the odds, I think that story sets up perfectly. And AJ is so good that I think he can make it legitimate beating Brock and have it not just feel like, oh, well, this is, you know, this is just it's pro wrestling. We know what it is.
I agree completely.
Well, if you guys want to follow any of Clayton for wrestling takes or Cincinnati Bearcats news and insight, you can do so by following him on Twitter at Clayton Truter. That's at CLAYTONTRUTOR. And also check out his work at downthedrive.com and follow them on Twitter at downthedrive. Clayton, thanks for joining the show, talking Cincinnati and talking wrestling with me. I appreciate it, man.
Oh, I enjoyed it a lot. Thank you so much for having me, and I'm looking forward to the 2017 football season.
There you have it. Very excited to watch Cincinnati this year and to see what Luke Fickell does with that program going forward. If there's any coach out there that knows the state of Ohio and how to find some of those in-state kids that may be flying under the radar, it's him. So definitely hoping he does well at that job and excited to watch the Bearcats this year. That'll wrap up this episode of the Two Stripes Podcast. Want to thank everybody for listening. Want to thank Clayton Truter for joining the show. If you like the show and want to hear any of the old episodes, then check out soundcloud.com/twostripespod or subscribe on Apple Podcasts by searching the Two Stripes Podcast, and you can leave a review and leave any comments, suggestions, whatever it may be that you think about the show. I'll be back next week with another preview as we get closer to the college football season, so be on the lookout for that. Until then, my name is Colton Denning, and this is the Two Stripes Podcast.